Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. Wendy Lichtman is the author of 6 novels for young readers. She's also written personal essays which have appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, Good Housekeeping, and other national publications. She teaches writers' workshops and speaks nationally about math and literacy. And her most recent books are Do the Math, Secrets, Lies, and Algebra, and The Writing on the Wall, about an 8th grade girl who thinks in math terminology as she tries to make sense of her own life. Wendy has been asked to be a speaker at many conferences, including Girls Math and Science Camp, Great Expectations in Math and Science Workshop, and the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. So welcome, Wendy. Let me ask you first, why do you feel math literacy is particularly important now?
Hi, Susan. Nice to be here. Why now is a good question. It's such a tech-dependent society now, and kids who are not literate at math have so many doors closed to them. Bob Moses of the Algebra Program, the Algebra Project, calls algebra the gateway to college, and it's really the truth, is that kids who are successful at algebra have such a better chance of going on to college and being successful there, and everyone knows that people with a college degree have much more chance of opening doors for career. So it's very important that we make math as appealing as possible so kids can be literate in it.
I was actually going to ask you about Bob Moses' Algebra Project, because that was an inspiration for you. So if you can talk a little bit about what that is and, you know, what you know about the origins of it and also how it impacted you.
Well, here's what I know. Dr. Moses is a old civil rights activist. By old, I mean he helped register voters in Mississippi in the 60s. He is also a mathematician, has his PhD in math, and he makes the connection between those two, which is quite a mind-blowing connection. His book is called Radical Equations, and it's about the equation we should pay attention to is that the reading and writing literacy in the 60s for people who wanted to vote has the same relationship as math literacy does now for success for our kids. And what he has done, what the Algebra Project has done, is taken algebra and put it into 8th grades all over the country, not just for the strongest students, but for all math students. And Dr. Moses got the MacArthur Genius Award the MacArthur Award. And what he did with those 5 years was teach in Mississippi to kids who would not have algebra available to them in 8th grade. Now, out of that has sprung the Algebra Project, which is a national project which encourages math literacy and the pleasure of math. It is kind of any way we can get under the radar of young people who say, I hate math, I'm lousy at math. Too many people see themselves that way, and I mean people, not only children, but adults, see themselves as, it's not in my life, math, it's a very unpopular, unpleasant subject, and to try to change that image is very appealing to me. I was an old math major, and so I come to it with that love, but I've been a writer for many, many decades, really, and so it's been kind of wonderful for me to pull back my old interest in math to incorporate. I'll tell you why I was inspired, though, going back a minute, is I went to hear Bob Moses speak one evening. And what he said was that all 8th graders should have algebra, not only because it's mathematically important, but it's because metaphorically it's important. That is, once we throw X and Y in there, once we give them unknowns and variables, it blows their mind. It changes the way they can see the world. And that brought me to writing the first novel, Do the Math, Secrets, Lies, and Algebra, because I had a story I wanted to tell that was filled with unknowns and a kind of a murder mystery that I never knew the results of. So I thought, that's how I want to write this book.
Now, With that, I mean, I've read that you talked about people being surprised, who you knew as an adult, being surprised that you were a math major, that they thought of you as a writer and didn't think that the two would be connected. So that's one thing that I wanted to ask you about. And what I found fascinating about Tess, your character, is that she really does think in math, and it's how she makes sense of things. You know, it really doesn't have to do with school and any of the rest of it. It has to do with her whole life. She understands it in math terms. Did you?
I did. But it was so unconscious. It was like maybe like a child who's got natural music abilities and their ability they don't think of themselves as now thinking musically. They just think this is how they picture something, or picturing, you know, children who picture things who are more visual, more artistic. And I was more mathematical, and it just seemed to me the way I understood the world. But you're right, as an adult, I did nothing with it, and most of my contemporaries, most of my friends would have had no idea that I got a math degree. Until now, of course, I've come out of the closet because the books are out. But that way of seeing the world, when I began writing from my fictional character's perspective, it was a pleasure for me to return to that. I think it's just a natural way that I organize thoughts. And it's been very exciting for me to get it on paper and to develop a character who does this openly.
Now, I remember times in the book where Tess is seeing people in terms of parallels or where they might intersect. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of Tess doing that? And can you remember an example of maybe you're doing that?
Hmm. Well, it's interesting. Here's a good examples of Tess doing it. She sees her friends as math symbols, her dearest friends who help her with different parts of her life. One is Sammy, who is so much drama, and she sees Sammy as S to the fifth power, because Sammy exaggerates everything. You know, Sammy can say something five times. You know, she says, "Do you think Damien is cute?" Tess asks her, and Sammy says, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." And so Sammy is S to the fifth power because she raises everything dramatically. And her other dear friend is Miranda, who makes everything positive, and Tess both likes and doesn't like that quality, and she sees Miranda's absolute value of M, because in the absolute value symbol, it just tells how far a number is from zero in the number line, so positive or negative is always positive, which she sees like Miranda. The second part of your question is interesting, because I started it in my third book in the series, and it's about a friendship that doesn't make it. And I remember very clearly seeing a friend in me that way, that we started out as a well-balanced equation, and that in that, when one of you changes, the other one has to, mm-hmm. And I was resisting that change because it didn't feel comfortable to me. And I've felt that way in adulthood as well, and so that's something I'm writing from that image right now, actually.
Now, what about girls in math? Because I think math is often thought of as boys' territory more than girls. What do you think is the reality of that? Is that as true as we maybe tend to think of it? But also, is it something that you think is changing or can be changing much now?
Yeah, the reality is that it's been imbalanced for a very, very long time. You know, there's this wonderful website, I'm sorry I don't remember the name, but it asks kids to look at their stereotypes. And one of their exercises is draw a mathematician. And without exception, I think nearly without exception, I should say, kids draw a white male dorky person. Now, a little bit, now they're updating it and it can be Asian. But that's it. It's a dorky male. And the exercise, of course, is to be able to draw a mathematician that is of any color, girls and boys, different ages, different people can love math. A lot of people are putting a lot of effort into including girls in math. And one of the interesting things to me, one of the many interesting things, is that when it's framed, the way math has been taught has been alienating to girls a lot. And when it's framed in a way that includes them, let me give you an example. The In engineering schools, it's much still, even here in 2008, it is quite balanced, imbalanced, so that there's more male students. When a project is put out, like the building of a bridge, rather than just the mathematics of it, but when it's explained as a what a bridge does is connect two communities, young women are more interested in it. And so it tends to be something that when we can grab the interpersonal part of it, is more appealing for whatever hardwiring we have.
Do you have organizations that you can suggest for teachers when they're trying to find ideas and resources or even peers who might be able to help?
Well, here's two of my favorites. Expanding Your Horizons, I think it's EYH.org, I'm not positive of that, but it's Expanding Your Horizons, is an organization of women mathematicians and scientists who are professionals in those fields and who give one-day seminars all over the country at different universities for middle school girls. It's out of Mills College in Oakland, California, but I know they give them, it's a national program, and they have a wonderful program that is in many, many cities, but also a website that's useful. The other one is radicalmath.org, and that's a group of math teachers that are looking at math and social change. And not too many people put those two phrases together. It's very important for us to see that connection.
And can you talk a little bit more about that, math and social change, and where that's being connected?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, you know, I observed many math teachers, which is a pleasure. I mean, I started doing it so that my writing would feel authentic and my math would feel authentic. But now I do it also because I'm blown out by the creativity in the math classrooms. So let me give you an example of what I would call math and social change. A recent class I observed, there are several, but one was instead of having kids figure out the angle in geometry for where the ladder is against the building, which is the one that we all grew up on, this teacher had them do a ramp for the disabled, how you would build a ramp that wheelchairs could use to their school, and they had to go outside and measure the steps up to their school, which is not accessible, by the way, and how they would design the ramp and how to work it out geometrically so that a kid in a wheelchair could join their school. That's math and social change. When you think that you need to know math to do that, it really is, it connects math in the world. It's not just some irrelevant subject over there. It's a part of our life that feels real.
What about computers and math and the internet and all of that? I mean, that's something that I think maybe now people most closely associate with math in the future.
Absolutely. And that's what I meant at first by our tech-dependent society. I think that girls being raised now, elementary and middle grade students, are pretty comfortable on computers. I'm very glad to say that. You know, I'm not sure they understand the binary system by which all computer systems are based. But, you know, I'm not as familiar with the computer world, to tell you the truth. But I do think that girls are getting more creative, are invited to be more creative with developing computer language too. And I've heard different classes at Expanding Your Horizons does a great deal with that. I'm sorry, I don't know more about it.
No, that's okay. Yeah. The let me ask you too about one of the things that happens is when parents may not feel as comfortable with math themselves. You know, you often have people saying, if I knew it, I can't remember it. How about that piece of it? Because it is a lot easier to encourage reading, let's say, if it's something that's very integrated into your own life.
Math is the subject that people say, wait till your father gets home, you know, and really not to punish you, but to sit and do the math. The truth is the fathers don't know it that well either, and we really are not a society that's strong in math. Adults don't feel good about their own skills, and then they both forgive their kids for not doing it well or doing it at all, and feel frustrated that they can't help. There's a wonderful program called the Family Math Program that goes into different schools and has an evening of math pleasure. I was at one recently. It was fabulous. I mean, the parents and the kids were sitting there trying to undo these knots and trying to do puzzles, and it was very cool to watch families engage in mathematical things. Families who play math, that is, who on the car ride, a long, boring car ride, instead of having the kids lost in their handheld, you know, computer things, if they are playing math games, those kids do better. Families who play cards together, those kids do better. If you have a night where the people are playing gin and poker in your family, those kids get into math in a pleasurable way. So I think there is something about just taking the charge, the negative charge out of that, that I'd love to encourage parents to do, even if they feel like they can't do the textbook stuff. They could do the love of learning part.
And the gaming things like that. What about, now, what do you hear from kids? First of all, with your books, do you hear from both boys and girls about them, or are they more from girls? And what kinds of things do you hear from kids in reaction to the books?
I've had wonderful experiences with kids, and boys are very into it. The covers are pitched more towards girls, and the main character is a girl, but there are many boy characters in there. I have a editorial group, a teenager editorial group, and they read everything before I publish it. And so I'm really, the boys give me a hard time, and I very much appreciate it, that if I make a male character too sweet or too out of touch with how he really would behave, So I've run it past enough boys and girls to feel like the book holds water for boys. They like it a lot. They like the mystery part very much. And I'm sorry, there was another part to your question about the boys and girls, the boy responses.
Yeah, I think just with the girls, I mean, when they're reading it, what kinds of things resonate with them, with both boys and girls?
With the interpersonal stuff. You know, this is what principals, one principal introduced me at a school recently, and she said, this is Wendy Lichtman who tricks kids into loving math. And what she meant, she said, it's the incidental learning that we've been looking for. You know, and whenever you read fiction, there's incidental learning involved. And, you know, you don't know that I was reading a story not long ago, it was nonfiction actually, I thought, oh my god, I had no idea I was so interested in farm machinery, you know, but it was so well written, it was a great story, and I was involved in it, and I learned something about farm machinery. Usually the incidental learning is in history or in geography or in, it may be the sciences if it's a homicidal book and we learn about how an autopsy, but very rarely, we can think on one hand the amount that have math in it. The kids really dig that it's a good story, truthfully, and that math is part of it, that they inhale a little math is, I think, frosting. I'm not sure that they go for the math, they go for the story.
Yeah. So they see it as a novel.
Yeah, sure, right.
Which it is.
Which is lucky.
What about other influences? We talked a little bit about Bob Moses, but what about other influences on your work over the years? I mean, I talked early on about your essays, but both other authors that have inspired you and some of that kind of work, how it's played in with your writing of the books.
Yeah, I wrote essays, personal first-person stories for many, many years, and still do. And some of my favorite essayists, Annie Lamont, I love her work. And, you know, I think it has influence. When I went back to writing books for young people, what I noticed, I was used to writing in like 1,100 words, because that's the length that gets published in an essay, someplace between 9 and 1,200. And my chapters had a narrative arc like that. What I mean by that is they built and then they resolved in that length of time. They each felt like an essay to me. I've been really studying writers of young adult books who are doing series now. One of them is the British writer McKay. I'm trying to think of her first name. She wrote the series, it begins with Safi's Angel and Indigo Star. It's a marvelous series. I'm sorry, McKay is her last name. Because I've been studying how to grab readers on the second book and third book. That is, I want to introduce the characters to those who haven't read it, but I want to not bore the ones who already know them. So that's been my homework lately. I have to say a lot of my inspiration is math teachers, too, which is a different inspiration for a writer. You know, I sit in their classrooms and drink it up. I was in a classroom recently, and a student, the teacher said, "What are you kids doing at the back table there?" And one of the boys says, "We're just cold kicking it live." And the teacher said, "Can you do math while you cold kick it live?" And the kid said, "Yeah." And the teacher said, "Okay." And I love that exchange so much that I nearly wanted to make a book with the title, Cold Kicking It Live, though I have absolutely no idea what it means. I truly have no idea what it means. And but the, you know, just the pleasure of the exchange. And I'm inspired by the people on the front lines with the kids.
The other question that I had wanted to ask you is, where do you look toward going in your writing? I mean, both maybe on the essay side, but also in the books.
Well, I said I started the third one in this series. This series always felt to me like a three-book story, and I'm delighted number two just came out, and I'm starting number three. That's very front and center in my heart right now, so that's the short term. You know what? I still get great pleasure out of writing for adults and writing essays, so I suspect I will always have a split career in this way.
And what kinds of essays have you written, just if people want to look some of those up?
Mm-hmm. There's a couple travel essays that I wrote for the New York Times. One was about a yoga. I was teaching writing at a yoga retreat, and I went there to get very mellow, but I was terrified of scorpions. It was in Mexico, and it's that story. And another is about me biking in Italy with a bad knee. And just personal things that hopefully talk to universal points. I've written also for the Washington Post several times. I have my daughter is deaf, and I've written a great deal about deafness and raising a deaf daughter. I wrote for Good Housekeeping many times too. I'm presuming those are all Googleable.
Well, thank you, Wendy. This has been really great, and hopefully people will look for the books, Secrets, Lies, and Algebra, and The Writing on the Wall, and also the essays.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's a pleasure talking to you.